In truth, he was being investigated by the ATF for arms dealings to finance his commune and needed to store his money and gun stock overseas. My eyes raked over page after page of information about the men who had founded the faith along with my uncle. Every one of them had a history of sexual violence. My uncle had created the commune to engage in sexual acts against children. He had created it all, manufactured a past to build a faith founded on pedophilia, attracting fellow sexual deviants to its cause until children were born and raised in the faith. I closed my eyes, but all my mind would show me was the Lord sharing, the videos Judah had shown me of young naked girls dancing for their profit. When my eyes opened, I looked down at Harmony, the cursed. The most beautiful girls from the entire collective communes were sent to Prophet David's place of residence to be kept for his use, to be schooled by the disciple guards, in reality, raped, to be used as vehicles for the guard's celestial cleansing. My uncle had used the excuse of the young cursed girl's beauty for his own sick pleasure. He had wanted them, thus created an elaborate tale so the people of the faith would leave them alone, fear them, so he and his closest men could have them all to themselves, men with desires such as his. Harmony. I whispered in utter disgust and dropped my head to hers, holding her just that little bit closer. Tears of frustration slipped from my eyes as I let all that I had learned sink in. It was all false. Everything was utter bullshit. And I had been part of it, integral to it. I had promoted it. I had killed and betrayed and caused pain for so many people for a lie. Rage, so thick and so pure, clogged my heart. I needed to get up. Despite my wounds and aching limbs, I needed to get the fuck off this floor. I gently guided Harmony's head off my lap and down onto the floor, supporting it with a dry towel she had not used. I pushed myself to my feet, taking the candle and file in my hands. On weak legs, I staggered to the open door and peered outside. Light was coming from near the building's entrance. Letting my rage carry me forward, I went looking for Brother Stephen. If the guards returned and caught me, I would welcome their attacks. Right now, with my head pounding and venom pumping around my body, I wanted to fucking draw blood. I wanted to take every cunt in this place down. I needed to make some pedophilic pricks hurt as much as I did. As I approached the entrance, I heard a few low murmurs and a single female voice. I blew out the candle, walked around the corner, and stopped dead in shock. Brother Stephen and the dark-haired woman Harmony had called Sister Ruth were sitting with the two new guards that had guarded the cell block of late. The taller of the guards jumped to his feet. He held his gun in his hands, and my fists clenched at the sight. What the hell was happening? Why the hell hadn't they come to take Harmony out of my cell? The guard glared at me, clearly welcoming any kind of threat. But Brother Stephen got to his feet and stood between us. He held up his hands and took a step forward.
"Cain,"
he said placatingly. The sound of my name coming from his mouth stopped me dead. I hated that name. "Ryder," I hissed. "My name is Ryder." Raising the file, I snarled. "Is this true? Is what's in here fucking true?" My body swayed, still feeling the effects of today's beating. I forced myself to stay standing. I needed to get these fucking answers more than I needed rest.
"Yes,"
Brother Stephen replied. He meant it. I could see it in his dark eyes. I expelled a long breath and dropped the file to the floor. "Shit," I spat, shame at being part of this place surging through me.
"Ryder,"
Brother Stephen said and moved closer. "How did you know?" I asked.
"I heard you telling Harmony who you were. We have never met the Prophet, your twin in the flesh. We did not know you shared the same face. Our guards did not recognize you under all the matted hair."
I turned to face the dark-haired woman who had answered my question. She was looking at me with tears in her eyes. I didn't know why, but the way she stared made me feel awash with an indescribable sadness. It confused me more than anything else had this night. "Sister Ruth," I said. She nodded her head, casting me a shy smile.
"Yes."
"So you know Judah is now the one in charge?"
"Yes,"
Brother Stephen replied. I looked at the guards. They were staring intently, listening to everything that was being said. "You are disciple guards," I said. "How? What?" Brother Stephen held my gaze.
"They are our friends."
"Our?" I questioned. Brother Stephen turned round and brought another chair to their makeshift circle near the guard's desk. He held his hand out, gesturing for me to take a seat. Unable to support myself anymore, I moved to the chair and sat down. My eyes were like a hawk's as I met the eyes of each of them, promising them without speaking that I would kill them if they tried to take me down, if this was some kind of sick ruse, if they tried to take Harmony from my cell. Brother Stephen sat down. The bigger of the two guards checked that the door of the building was locked, then retook his seat, his gun held firmly in his hands. "Speak," I demanded, my voice displaying every morsel of the anger that was consuming me inside.
"Cain, have you ever wondered what happens to defectors of the faith?"
His question caught me off guard. "They are punished," I said, picturing the cursed Delilah. I winced, knowing that her treatment was all for fucking nothing. "They are made to pay in flesh or isolation for the sin they have committed. They are encouraged to repent. It's in our scriptures." Brother Stephen nodded his head.
"And afterwards, where do they go? What if they do not repent?"
He paused.
"Have you ever noticed that the sinners rarely re-enter the commune?"
I stared at the older men in confusion. "I don't know what the hell you mean. I was raised away from our people. I was kept away in seclusion with Judah in Utah. Up until a few months ago, I had never set foot in the commune. I ran my hands down my tired face. It overwhelmed me. And Judah was the prophet's hand. He was the inquisitor of the sinners. He doled out the punishments." I shook my head. "What are you getting at? Who the fuck are y'all? And I want the motherfucking truth." I was over pussyfooting around. I needed these people to be honest with me, honest and straight to the point. I was done with trying to be polite and prophet-like in this delusional cesspit of a faith. My anger was in the driving seat right now. I had learned long ago to control it, to let the calmer Cain shine through. I gave zero fucks about that anymore. Prophet Cain was dead. That cunt was done. Brother Stephen looked to Sister Ruth, then the two guards. They all nodded their heads at a silently asked question.
"Our small commune was in Puerto Rico. We had been mostly left alone by the prophet's men until recently."
He sighed, but I could hear the barely contained rage in his voice. Brother Stephen clasped his hands together.
"We, the people in our commune, were all defectors of the faith, Cain."
He pointed to the guards and Sister Ruth.
"We were all cast out for doubting the beliefs and practices, sinning against the faith, or speaking out against the prophet. We were all punished, then sent to Puerto Rico to suffer in isolation."
He laughed a sardonic laugh.
"Prophet David believed a commune in the stifling heat, a land so different from our own, would re-inspire our belief in his ways. He did not bargain on a small collective set of people finding solace in one another's doubts."
Leaning forward, making sure he had my attention, he said,
"As a community, we grew strong. Not all of us. Many remained devout. Some guards stuck to their posts. But there were enough of us to know that when the time came, we would return and try, somehow, to free those born and raised in this sham of a faith. Those so immersed in our life here that they do not even know there is a world outside, a world where they can thrive and be free."
Brother Stephen sat back in his chair.
"We managed to use some locals in Puerto Rico to discover the truth about Prophet David and compiled our evidence. Our plan to return stemmed from there. Everything was false."
One of the guards answered tightly.
"All of it. Everything that was done to us and our families was so that an old man could stick his dick in children and get away with it. The old bastard ran arms out of Israel for cash and plowed it into making kid porn for his own sick viewing, into allowing abuse to become the norm."
He paused, his eyes squeezing shut as if he was reliving something that had happened to him. I wanted to ask what, but then he opened his eyes and added,
"Then he started distributing that porn to outside parties. The children, doing things to him, to other guards.
He trailed off, his face reddening with anger. I joined him in that instant rage. White-hot pain sliced through my heart. My uncle. He sold child porn to fund his commune. I knew without even asking the question that Judah would be too. My own twin doing something so fucking sick. My head was racing from all that I was being told. I could barely keep up. My blood was passing through my veins so fast that the sound whooshed in my ears, making me lightheaded. I leaned forward and cradled my head in my hands. They were all silent as I closed my eyes and tried to regain some composure. When I looked up, their eyes were boring into mine. It was all bullshit. All of it, I whispered, and felt the stab of betrayal and outright fucking humiliation settle inside. A gentle hand landed on my bare shoulder. It was Sister Ruth. Her eyes were shining with sympathy and her bottom lip was quivering.
You were kept away from the world? Your whole life?
She asked, her voice riddled with hurt. I nodded my head. Both me and Judah. Growing up, we only had a scholar with us. He was a harsh taskmaster. I only met Prophet David once when I was 14. Other than that, there was no one. A tear fell from her eye.
So there was no one to be a mother or father to you? No one to give you love and affection? No one to just love you?
A cavernous hole burrowed in my chest. I had never thought of it like that before. But there hadn't been. No one had ever come to us when we cried, when we were hurt. It was only ever Judah and I who kept each other company, who helped the other when he was sick. No, I replied, a lump catching in my throat. I thought back to the times I'd been sick growing up, the times when Judah had. The lump grew thicker when I pictured myself caring for Judah, wiping his head with a cold rag when he had a burning fever, patching up his cuts when he had fallen. It was curious, because when I thought about the times that I had needed help, when I had run a fever or caught the flu, I couldn't remember Judah ever being there with me. He was always deep in study. The truth hit me hard, like a crowbar to the ribs. Judah had never cared for me when I'd been sick. Not like I had done for him. He never helped me. I didn't realize I had spoken that aloud until Sister Ruth's hand took hold of mine. She squeezed it tightly. I swallowed down the pain. Why had I imagined that differently? I said to no one in particular. Why, in my head, did I believe that Judah had helped me when he hadn't? Not even once.
Because he was all you had,
Sister Ruth said sadly.
The reality that you raised yourself without love or care was harder to take, so your head created an illusion. One that let you believe your brother loved you, cared for you as much as you did him.
I listened to the woman's words. She sounded like she spoke from a place of understanding, of knowledge. She was right. I wouldn't have coped without Judah, at least that's what I had always told myself. But as I thought of all that he had done, all the ways he had let me down, time after time, I realized that I have really been alone all along. I finished out loud. The weight of it hit me, and I had to fight for breath.
Not anymore,
Sister Ruth said and placed her hand on my cheek. I looked into her eyes and felt warmth in them that I had never experienced before. Like she somehow knew me. I almost felt like I knew her.
You have us now. Our support,
Brother Stephen said, pulling me from Sister Ruth's kind, searching eyes. The two guards nodded their heads.
I am Solomon,
the bigger of the two said.
This is my brother Samson.
You are disciple guards here in New Zion now. Solomon nodded. How have you managed to infiltrate Judah's inner circle?
We showed how strict and good at our job we were when we arrived. We told him that we had repented for our wrongdoings, but were waiting for the true prophet to come and save us from our exile. We said that we wanted to prove our worth to him.
Samson nodded in agreement.
The prophet needs more skilled men for the attack he has planned. He saw our size, our youth, and he took us on without thought. We have given him nothing but loyalty. Or so he thinks. We play our parts well.
The attack, I muttered. Solomon sat forward.
On a group on the outside world. He refers to them as the devil's men.
I know them, I said. Four sets of eyes widened in shock. Prophet David put me into their group undercover for several years. He was testing my strength. We stole their gun contracts from under their noses through the information I gathered. I lived as they did, fought as they did, and loved as they did, until I betrayed them for the order.
My God,
Sister Ruth said, her eyes dropping to my hangman tattoos.
That is why you have these haunting images on your skin?
Yes, I sat back, feeling drained. Judah wants these men to suffer because they took women from Prophet David, ones that were needed to fulfill the prophecy. He wants them to pay. Brother Stephen looked at Sister Ruth. Complete shock covered his face.
The cursed sisters of Eve?
He asked, voice low and urgent. Yes, they reside with the hangmen now. I pictured them all in my head, realizing how fucking fortunate they were that they had found a home there. They are married to some of them, or about to be. They are happy. Happy away from this fucking place.
They survived,
Solomon said quietly to Brother Stephen, his expression stunned. Solomon turned to me.
We were told they had all died in the devil's men's attack on Prophet David's commune. We were told there were no survivors from the cursed sisters.
No, I said. They are alive. Until recently, we had been trying to get them back. It is why Judah wants this attack. He doesn't like to fail. It was me who let them go. Silence descended on the group. Suddenly, a soft knock sounded on the door. I stood, ready to race back to protect Harmony in my cell. Solomon rushed to the door. I was just about to reach the mouth of the long hallway when I heard a familiar voice. I turned to see Sister Phoebe. Her eyes met mine as she entered.
You are awake,
she said in relief, casting me a small smile. Phoebe, what are you? I stopped, not wanting to put her in danger. I guessed she wouldn't know the truth about these people. But I was wrong. She turned to Brother Stephen.
They have set a date.
When?
Brother Stephen asked.
In 5 days' time, at 6 o'clock. He announced it to Brother Luke, the prophet's hand, tonight at dinner. They will be preparing for the ceremony to surprise the people.
And the attack? Samson asked eagerly.
I heard them say 4 days later.
Phoebe lowered her eyes.
After the prophet has had time alone with his bride to purify her soul.
My sudden feeling of disgust matched the expression on Phoebe's face when I realized what they were discussing. Her blue eyes met mine, and I watched sympathy fill their depths. What? I asked, knowing she was holding something back.
Before the attack on that 4th day, Judah, he...
Phoebe took a deep breath. I walked forward, and placing my hands on her shoulders, asked, What? Tell me. She flinched as I touched her. I saw the fresh brush on her cheek and the new cut on her lip. But as much as I wanted to help her, I needed the information she had right now. I needed her to tell me what the hell my twin was planning. It was the only way I could help stop all this shit.
He is going to kill you, Prophet Cain. Judah, he is planning to sacrifice you publicly just before the attack, 4 days after the wedding to Harmony. He has branded you a traitor of the faith and an unsalvageable, corrupted soul. The people believe you have been possessed by evil, corrupted by the cursed. Your death will signify the beginning of God's holy war against the devil's men.
Phoebe held my gaze.
Your day of reckoning has been sealed. No,
Sister Ruth said softly. I crossed the room and sat back down. I wasn't surprised in the slightest. I knew Judah wouldn't leave me alive, not after I had tried to kill him. I had seen it in his eyes, because he knew I could kill him. He knew I'd be too much of a threat to all that he had built if I wasn't silenced permanently.
I have to go,
Phoebe said and turned to leave. As she gripped the handle of the door, she stopped. Turning around, she said,
I will not be able to get back to see you all before the ceremony this week. Other sisters will be sent to clean you.
Her voice cracked. But she steeled herself and faced Sister Ruth.
Meister, he is becoming suspicious. He is keeping me close. If something happens to me, if the plan fails, please honor our agreement. Please, just save.
Sister Ruth walked across the room to Phoebe and pressed a kiss to her cheek.
I will. I promise,
Sister Ruth said. Phoebe nodded her head and giving me one last smile, she left. Phoebe has been helping you, I said. Brother Stephen came to sit beside me.
We realize that she is being hurt by a close confidant of the Prophet. He refers to himself as Meister. He's almost as delusional as the Prophet is. Phoebe has something she needs help with. She has supplied us with information, and we have agreed to give her the help that she needs.
5 days, Samson said before I could ask Brother Stephen what Phoebe needed help with. They were talking about the wedding. You plan to get her out? I asked, pointing toward my cell. Samson hesitated, then he sighed in defeat. When we knew the Prophet was recalling us to New Zion, we tried to get Harmony to leave. We had people that could get her out in Puerto Rico, but she would not go.
She had no one she knew outside of us. She would have nowhere to go, nobody she loved,
Brother Stephen said.
So we told her all about Prophet David. She knows he lied about his revelations from God, that he was obsessed with gaining power. She knows he liked raping young girls.
Solomon spat, venom in his tone.
When we told her we would return to New Zion to try and bring it down, she would not let us leave her behind. I tried to make her leave,
Brother Stephen said.
I did not want her to return here or be scouted by the Prophet's guards, but she would not go for a deeply personal reason. She wanted to help. When the guard came and announced her as accursed, she decided that was how it was to be done. Harmony told us she wanted to marry the Prophet so we could get closer to the evidence of the commune's crimes. She willingly sacrificed her freedom to help us in our mission.
My chest ached, yet filled with such fucking pride at her bravery.
But she did not expect the Prophet to be so cruel,
Sister Ruth whispered sadly.
She has never said anything, but I can see how this coming marriage is affecting her.
Ruth cleared her throat.
She feels like the fate of this commune rests on her shoulders, and like the brave soul that she is, she suffers in silence.
She will willingly marry that monster to help those she loves. She is willing to submit to his cruelty and risk her life so she can save those who are trapped,
Brother Stephen added. He met my eyes.
We did not know the Prophet was so cruel.
His face contorted.
I would never have brought her here, to this, had I known beforehand. We have brought her to hell.
A thick silence stretched over us. Then Solomon said,
We cannot let him marry her. She has already been through so much. We cannot see her publicly raped by him. The Prophet will kill her eventually. Either he will or his consort will. We have heard nothing but frightening truths about Sister Sarai, too. The things she has been doing to some of the younger girls the Prophet awakens. Sick things. Sexual things.
He took a deep breath.
Harmony would never agree to this. But I cannot live with myself if I stand by and watch her destroyed for our cause. We have to think of another way to bring this place down, and we have to get her out before she is tied to the Prophet and taken from our hands.
How? I asked, in complete agreement with everything they said.
We are planning to somehow get us all out. Then we will go to whoever we need to and give them the evidence we have. It is not as much as we would like, but we only need the outside authorities to come and investigate. There will be enough evidence on the property to arrest all in charge for child sexual abuse and child pornography,
Brother Stephen said.
I used to live on the outside world before I came here in my 20s. It was a long time ago, but I remember how some things work.
I shook my head. No, it won't work. All eyes were suddenly on me. I inhaled deeply. We are in alliance with the KKK. I helped make the deal directly. Judah has connections in government and in the police. The commune is protected, heavily protected by powerful allies. You would be killed before anyone who could help got wind of this place. Too many people have too much to lose. I'd bet all the fucking money I have that those people are profiting from all the porn videos you've been telling me about. They won't let that get out.
Shit,
Solomon said and rubbed his hand across his face.
Then we need a new plan, and quickly. The thought of that bastard taking her the way I have seen him with other women.
My mind raced with possibilities, but all the routes led me to just one place, one outcome. It would be death for me, but it could help the other people chained to this life. It could save Harmony. I lifted my head. I have an idea. It's risky, it might not work, but it could be our only choice. The group listened with wide, hopeful eyes as I told them of my plan. With each word, I grew more and more confident that it could work, and if I knew my brother as well as I believed I did, he would fall right into my trap. Judah's pride would always be his biggest downfall.
Hell,
Brother Stephen said when I had finished speaking. He locked eyes with Samson and Solomon in turn, and finally, Sister Ruth. She had been silent as I had spoken, her head bowed. It is our only option, Samson said reluctantly. Brother Stephen held out his hand. I slid my hand into his as he said,
Then it is agreed.
But don't tell Harmony, I said. I don't want her to know, in case it doesn't come off. Stephen released my hand.
I was about to ask you the very same thing. If she thought we had lost faith in her, if she thought we were removing her from this task, she would refuse. She has a strong sense of duty. She is fearless, like no one else.
Despite all that could go wrong, and despite everything I had just discovered, I smiled, because that was Harmony, fearless and strong. I sat back in my seat and took three deep breaths. As I did, I felt the tiredness I should have embraced hours ago weaken my limbs. I pushed myself to my feet. I am going to sleep. Sadness washed over me when I thought of Harmony in my cell. Every second I was with her, I wanted more and more time with her. I had only known her a short time, but in that time, I had been more my true self than I had ever been in my life. When I was living with the hangmen, I had once read that the important thing wasn't the number of minutes you spent with someone, but the quality of realness those minutes held. Every moment I had spent with Harmony saw a dead part of me being reborn. As I held her hand through the gap, as I stared into her dark eyes, she was placing herself into my soul. It pained me that our time was finite. My heart ached at the thought of not having her by my side, so I decided that I would cherish what time I had left. I began to move my feet, my heavy limbs leading me toward where Harmony slept. Brother Stephen moved to block my path. I jerked my head up to see what he wanted.
Cain,
he said, his voice barely audible. He gripped my upper arm. His face was ashen, and I could see that something was troubling him.
Before you leave, there is something else you should know.
I tipped my head, indicating for him to speak, and I listened. I listened to what he had to say, not missing one single piece of information. And all the while I stood there unmoving, in complete and utter fucking shock.
Chapter 10. Harmony. 5 days later. The sense of vanilla and lavender oils being poured onto my skin brought a nauseous feeling to my stomach. Kept my eyes to the ground as Sarai roughly applied the perfume, her fingers digging into my skin. I could feel her intense blue gaze boring into my bowed head, but I kept calm. I would not let a girl of her age intimidate me. Another sister, whose name I did not know, braided two front sections of my hair, then pulled them back from my face. My face and body were still and stoic, but my heart was racing like a duck's leg swimming frantically underwater. It was fear. Pure and undiluted fear. Today was the day of my wedding to Prophet Cain. Despite the many days counting down to this moment, I could not believe that I was really here. I could not believe that after everything I had already been through at the hands of this faith, I was in this commune, willingly placing myself in this position. But it had to be done. For the sake of us all. I inhaled deeply through my nose, exhaling slowly through my mouth to hold back the tears that threatened to fall. My eyes closed of their own accord, and I could not help but picture what this wedding would be like. People, so many people who knew nothing of my existence, would today see me wed the prophet, a man I had only met once, a man I was told would not see me again until our wedding because I tempted him too much. They would see him take me on the ceremonial bed. They would watch me through the gauze curtain, being taken against my will by the prophet. And they would do nothing about it. they would praise the Lord for its occurrence. Disgust swirled within me when I pictured the prophet's face, but that disgust switched to warmth when I immediately thought of Ryder. I never thought of Ryder as Prophet Cain. Prophet Cain was a cruel man lording his power over innocent people, convincing them to bend to his will. Ryder was a kind, gentle, but tortured soul. I fought back the smile from my lips as I let my mind drift back over the past 5 days. When I had awoken the morning after Ryder had revealed his true identity to me, I was in his arms. I, Harmony, was cradled to his chest like a contented lover, his large, strong arms keeping me to his side as though he was terrified I would leave. No man had ever treated me the way he had, staring down into my eyes as I lifted my head to stare up into his. His hand slowly stroked down the side of my face, only stopping to let his fingertips drift over my kiss-swollen lips. His every touch was an answered prayer, the childhood prayer I had refused to ever let wane, that I would be wanted by somebody, loved for me and me alone, the wish that every cursed sister begs God for, but one that is never answered. I had held my breath, seeing the undisguised affection he held for me in his dark eyes, but seeing the internal struggle he was fighting, too, my smile fell. If there was ever a man who physically represented a torn soul, it was Ryder. He was two sides of the same coin, a man straddling a barrier only known in his heart. Any mention of his brother caused a visible pain to settle on his face. Any mention of the sins he said he'd committed as prophet struck him as hard as any physical blow. If his hand happened to be in mine, it would always squeeze a little more. I had no idea what he had done to make him hate himself so badly. I could not believe this man was capable of doing anything wrong or untoward. His heart was pure. His heart was true. I wanted to help him, but I had no idea how. Ryder kept so much back that I knew my knowledge of him was barely scratching the surface. I wanted him to let me in, but he had not let me get that far, always keeping me in a perpetual place of warmth, of happiness. He never let any darkness into our small haven of solace. He had made it our very own sanctuary. He knew who we were now, and he knew the reason why we had come back. He never said much about it, but I could see that what I had committed to do pained him. I had to. If everything worked out, perhaps I could save him, too. For 5 days we had kissed. Feather-light, innocent kisses, two inexperienced people trying to show how much the other was treasured. I was sure I was now addicted to those kisses. No man had ever simply wanted kisses from me and nothing more. Better still, Ryder did not fear me. He did not see me as evil incarnate. I saw the truth of that every time he looked at me. Every time the corner of his lips would pull into a contented smile. Ryder saw me. The real me. At least, as much as I would let him see. We both had secrets, pasts we had yet to reveal. There was no use burdening him with mine, with the terrors that plagued me each night. Because this short piece of heaven we had found in a stone cell was exactly that. Short. My heart had been irreparably broken many months ago, so much so that I had chosen to live an almost solitary life in Puerto Rico. But since speaking to Ryder, that heart had paused in its crumbling. He had given me a short reprieve to breathe again, to chase the loneliness of loss from my spirit. But this week, the pieces had begun to break away again, only in greater chunks. Because as well as the loved ones I had lost so completely, now I would lose Ryder. As the countdown to the wedding approached, the pain in my chest had grown worse. Right now, I could scarcely breathe. After today, I would not share a cell with that man anymore. The man I was hopelessly enamored with. I would not know his touch, his lips' sweet taste, his kindness. From today, I would live with a man that shared Ryder's face, but none of his gentleness. In mere minutes, I would walk down the aisle to celestially merge myself to a man that represented everything I despised, a savage amongst cruel men, an instigator of pain. Somebody jerked aggressively on my hand, sending a slice of red-hot pain up my arm. I blinked and focused on the culprit, Sister Sarai. I could see the frustration in her expression as she glared at me, lips pursed. Did you hear anything that I said? She snapped. I shook my head. The prophet has given me orders to pass on to you. You must keep your eyes cast down through the ceremony, and you must not speak except in the moments you take your vows. Never raise your eyes to meet his or anyone else's. Is that clear? It is imperative that you do this joining by our book. The people need to understand the significance of the cursed marrying their prophet. A wave of ire washed through me at Sarai's cutting tone, but I tamped it down and simply nodded. Sarai released my arm. A flower garland was placed on my head, then Sarai waved her hand, motioning for me to stand. I did, my jeweled sandals tapping lightly on the stone floor. From outside came the tinny sound of speakers playing melodic, lyricless music. But my attention was captured by what was in front of me. A large mirror was fixed to the wall, a large mirror that now showed me in all of my bridal attire. I stared at the sleeveless white garment that clung to my body. My long blonde hair hung in loose ringlets down my back, the two braided front sections secured at the crown of my head, allowing every inch of my veil-free face to be seen. I lifted my hand and hovered my fingers over my cheeks and eyes. Sarai moved beside me and knocked my hand away. "Do not touch your face," she ordered. "It will ruin how we have made you look." Dark-coated lashes curled like long wings over my brown eyes. My cheeks were pink as though fleshed, and my lips were painted a deep rose. I rubbed them together, the colored cream tasting like fruit on my tongue. A delicate garland of fresh pastel-colored flowers lay upon my head. Sarai thrust something into my hands, and when I looked down, I saw it was a small bouquet matching the flowers on my head. As I clutched the spray, I could not stop trembling. "It is truly happening," I thought as I stared at the painted stranger in front of me. I recognized nothing of this woman. I felt nothing like my true self. My body suddenly felt weak, drained of any remaining hope, drained of the calm I had found in Puerto Rico during my short reprieve from this stifling, cursed title, drained of the temporary happiness I had found in Ryder's arms. Ryder, the mysterious, broken man who had stolen what was left of my shattered heart. I allowed my mind to drift to the man who had become the focus of my every waking thought. I wondered what he was doing at this very moment. I felt like crying when I wondered who would treat him and care for him after his daily punishments from now on. My heart lurched with sadness as I recalled how his weary eyes would watch me as I washed away the blood and dirt collected on his skin. As if I was his savior. As if no one had ever shown him such care and compassion in his life. As if afraid I would leave him, as everyone in his life always had. From today, he would be alone again. I could barely breathe as I thought of him sitting day after day in that cell, lonely and defeated. It broke my heart. I glanced up at my foreign reflection, and I felt the life seeping from me with every breath. In a better world, I would belong to a man such as Ryder. We would choose to be in each other's arms. I had heard the stories of the outside world from Brother Stephen and Sister Ruth, how people were free to live as they wished, with whomever they wished. But in my life, I had only ever experienced hurt and pain, and loss, such loss that I could not let myself remember those I had loved so fully, yet lost so tragically. Just the memory burned me alive from within. These past 5 days, Ryder and I had barely spoken a word. I knew it was the wedding that had occupied his mind. It had clearly occupied my guardian's minds, and Solomon and Samson's, too. When I had left Ryder this morning to begin my wedding preparations, there had been no great goodbye. Instead, there had been unshed tears of frustration in his eyes. I had held him close, willing myself to commit his touch to memory. When his twin took me, I wanted to picture Ryder's version of their shared face above me. It would make the situation easier to bear. As I left, Ryder had silently pressed a gentle kiss to my lips and run his finger down my cheek. With that, he had turned around to face the wall, fists at his side, and I had walked out of the cell. I had left him all alone. Suddenly, my bridal garment was wrenched up my legs from behind, baring my naked lower half. My arms moved instinctively to try to stop whoever had touched me, but they were then pinned to my sides by the sister whose name I did not know. Sarai moved in front of me, blocking my view of the mirror. Her eyes never left mine as her hand reached out and cupped between my legs. No, I protested. I felt Sarai's deft fingers spread a cool liquid along my core. Please, I begged, trying to get free from the other sister's grip. I could not move. I wanted to close my eyes, but when I saw the victory in Sarai's eyes, I forced myself to keep them open. She met my challenge by curling her fingers and inserting the liquid further inside me. My nose flared at the unwanted intrusion, but I breathed through the discomfort. I would not show my weakness. Sarai put her mouth to my ear. It is to make you wet and able to take him in the ceremonial bed. He is big, and this joining needs to go to plan. Nothing can go wrong. I fought back the bile that was racing up my throat. Sarai withdrew her hands, leaving my inner thighs damp. The door opened, flooding the room in daylight. A guard stood in the doorway. Move, he ordered sternly. I did as I was told. I passed where he stood, to where another guard was waiting outside. Even from back here, in the small quarters near the Prophet's mansion, I could hear the excitement of our people in the air. They would be in their ceremonial whites. They were only asked to wear their ceremonial whites when something truly special or important was happening. However, I was sure that they would never expect what was coming this day. The guards sandwiched me between them as they led me along a path to the patch of land in front of the Prophet's residence. With every step, my heart beat faster and faster. The supposedly joyous music coming through the speakers only sounded ominous to my ears. My steps faltered when suddenly the music was cut, and a familiar voice came through the speakers. The guard in the front suddenly stopped and held up his hand to someone I could not see. I realized that we must be at the end of the aisle. My hands tightened on the stems of my bouquet. The Prophet began to speak.
People of the Order, you have been gathered here today to witness a miracle, a hope we thought had been lost.
In the long pauses between his words, the commune was deathly silent, the people hanging on to every word the Prophet spilled. His voice sent shards of ice down my back. I breathed in slow breaths to compose myself.
Today, you will all bear witness to an answered prayer. Just when we thought a prophecy would not be fulfilled, God showed us he would never desert his people and delivered us a gift, the gift of salvation. Today, we celebrate that gift.
The guard ordered me forward with a wave of his hand, but my legs began to shake so much I was unsure that I could walk. Sarai appeared in my peripheral vision and motioned with her finger for me to look down. I bowed my head. Making sure I breathed steadily, I stepped forward until the path turned to green grass under my feet. The guard placed his hand on my back and steered me until I knew I faced the congregation. A collective gasp sounded amongst the people, and in that moment, I was glad my orders were to keep my eyes downcast. I would not be able to move if I had to look my people in the eyes. People that detested me as much as they believed they needed me to save their mortal souls.
Walk,
the guard behind me said quietly, too quietly for anyone else to hear.
The Prophet waits at the end of the aisle.
I slowly made my way down the aisle. The people were sitting on the ground, dressed in white. Out of the corner of my eye, I could see some of their faces. The few I caught actually looked me in the eye, and their mouths dropped in shock.
Accursed, they whispered,
confirmation traveling through the congregation at lightning speed. I heard people crying, rejoicing for the salvation they believed me to be. Worse, I heard them praising the Prophet, speaking in tongues and wailing in delight. The atmosphere became electric as I approached the altar. I stopped and turned to face Prophet Cain. He reached out and took my hand in his, and I felt as though I was going to be sick. He was not gentle like Ryder. He had taken my hand aggressively, arrogantly.
Proceed, he barked at Brother Luke, the Prophet's hand.
I flinched at the harshness in his voice and tried my hardest not to shake. The ceremony began. I listened as Brother Luke read from the scriptures and spoke of the prophecy of the cursed sisters. I listened as he read Prophet David's words about a devil-tainted woman's soul merging with the Prophet of the Order to save all those that followed the Order's path. I did not hear much else. The people had grown louder in their excitement. I heard snatches of Prophet Cain responding to something that Brother Luke asked. Then the prophet pulled on my hand, and I knew it was my turn to speak.
Do you, Harmony, cursed sister of Eve, take your Lord Prophet and Savior to be your wedded husband, allowing him to be the king of both your heart and soul, to rule over you as your master and spiritual leader, to obey his every command and welcome him to chase the evil from your tainted soul?
I do, I whispered, feeling my heart fall in sadness. The crowd roared as Brother Luke held up his hands and shouted,
The union of the cursed and the prophet has been sealed.
I saw Prophet Cain's feet inch closer to mine. He tugged me closer to him. I cried out as my body collided with his, and before I knew it, Prophet Cain had pulled on the back of my hair to raise my mouth toward his. With no warning, he crashed his lips to mine in a rough, unyielding kiss. I whimpered as his tongue plunged into my mouth. My hands balled into fists, instinctively preparing to fight him off, but I dropped my hands down to my side and let him take my mouth. This was just the beginning of what he would take without permission. I had no choice but to obey. I kept my eyes cast down as the prophet released me and moved to address his people.
I will now take my bride to the wedding bed and begin the long and heavy process of ridding evil from her soul, of chasing the devil from her soul with my seed.
The crowd roared in happiness. Prophet Cain turned us away from the crowd and toward an elevated platform. I risked a glance up at the stage, and my stomach rolled in trepidation. In the center was a large, high mattress draped in a shroud of gossamer white gauze curtains. Prophet Cain's hand tightened on mine. He led us up the staircase to the bed. With every step, my fear intensified. By the time we had reached the bed, I was terrified that I would pass out from that fear. The prophet came to a stop. I saw Brother Luke's feet before us.
Prophet, Brother Luke said, the joining bed is ready.
Thank you, brother, the prophet replied, releasing my hand to part the curtains.
I stood waiting for my command, my legs wobbling so hard that I did not think I would be able to move. I gasped as someone moved behind me and drew the garment off my shoulders. It fell to the floor, pooling at my feet. I screwed my eyes shut in shame as my naked body was bared to our people. I trembled with humiliation, and it took everything I had not to break down in tears.
Go to your prophet, a low, stern voice ordered into my ear.
I opened my eyes. Brother Luke was holding apart the curtains around the bed. The prophet lay in the center, still fully clothed.
Go, Brother Luke ordered when I made no move.
With leaden feet, I forced myself to walk. I did not breathe as I made my way to the bed. When I raised my knee and crawled to the center beside the prophet, I was sure I would never breathe again. As I had been instructed by the sisters this morning, I lay flat on my back, keeping my eyes downcast, never meeting the prophet's gaze. I placed my hands over my stomach, frustrated with myself as I failed to stop their intense, incessant shaking. The curtains were closed around us. The crowd began praying for salvation, their murmurs penetrating through the gauze. I looked at the curtains, trying to see how see-through they truly were. I could see Brother Luke and the other elders through the material, but their features were blurred. I took some comfort in that. Although this joining would be public, only our movements would be seen. My tears would not betray my fear to the people. I could not stand for them to see me break.
You must do this.
Tinny prayer music began pouring through the speaker surrounding the commune, and my heart matched its pace to the beat. I felt the prophet shift and remove his pants, but not his top. He lay back down next to me. Stray tears escaped from the corners of my eyes as he climbed above me. I closed my eyes as I felt his warm breath ghost over my face. I expected him to speak. I expected him to be rough and cruel. So I was startled when he delicately pushed a strand of hair from my forehead. His hand fell to mine on my stomach. I stiffened as he laced his fingers through mine. I sucked in a shocked breath when I realized his hand was trembling. I froze, completely still, as I fought over whether or not to open my eyes. I counted to three, then blinked up through my long, painted lashes. and straight into the kindest set of dark eyes I had ever seen. A pair of eyes I would know from anyone else's. He moved our joined hands up to his lips, and that was when I saw it. I saw what his subtle movement was showing me. His heavily inked skin, the demonic forms peeking out from beneath the tunic sleeves. My heart swelled to an impossible fullness, and astounded relief flooded through me. "Ryder," I mouthed, expelling the breath that I had kept so tightly caged. Ryder's dark eyes closed in relief, too. He placed a kiss on our clasped fingers and opened his eyes. His fear of this moment reflected my own. Ryder stared into my eyes, and we both tensed as the crowd's prayers grew louder, urging the joining to be complete. Brother Luke coughed from beside the bed.
"Prophet Cain, is everything well? Get away from this bed, now," he snarled.
My skin crawled. Ryder sounded just like his twin. Brother Luke scurried to the farthest side of the platform, but I could see him watching from where he had stopped.
"I'm so sorry," Ryder whispered.
I looked at his face and saw the regret and sorrow etched onto his every beautiful feature.
"How?" I whispered back. "I do not understand. How are you here?"
Ryder shook his head, silently telling me that now was not the time to ask. I had played this role of the prophet's betrothed for many days. I could do it for a short time more. His eyes closed. The people outside were becoming restless. I subtly moved my hand to lie over his chest, and he opened his eyes. The pain that shone back at me cut down my heart.
"Ryder,"
I said almost inaudibly,
"we must do this. Judah, he would not have hesitated."
He winced.
"I know,
but..."
A shade of scarlet washed over his olive skin.
"What?"
I asked, moving my body closer to his, trying to urge him to lie directly above me. Ryder's already shocked eyes widened further, but he moved over me, his naked lower body meeting my own. His pupils grew as our bare skins brushed. He sucked in a breath, and I lifted my hand to his cheek.
"Ryder."
"I don't know what to do," he said, cutting me off.
Sorrow infused my heart, seeing such a formidable man so scared. Ryder's face reddened further, but this time it was an anger.
"Harmony," he rasped. "I'm so fucking sorry. This shouldn't be happening. Not like this."
I almost broke at the sincerity in his voice. As I watched Ryder's face become alive with disgust and uncertainty, with a heavy conflict he felt at taking me right here and right now, I knew I had to take charge. I had to lead the way. I slowly moved my legs apart. Ryder's body, hovering over mine, fell into the space between.
"Harmony,"
he whispered nervously.
"Shh,"
I soothed, nodding my head.
"We must do this."
His head turned away.
"I feel like a rapist. I feel like I am here, just like my brother would have been, forcing you against your will. It's not who I am."
And I knew. I knew then that he was absolutely nothing like his brother. Because he was so incredibly torn over this joining, he felt sick at the thought of forcing himself upon me. It was exactly why I wanted this. Why I would welcome it. I had never known such kindness.
"I want it," I blurted out.
Ryder froze. He looked back at me.
"You cannot be serious. It's wrong. It's so fucking wrong."
Brushing my hand through his long hair, I said,
"Although it is not ideal, I am not refusing this. You and me, together in this way, it will not be by force, never by force, but instead with open eyes and willing hearts."
"Harmony,"
Ryder whispered, and leaned down to take my lips with his own. As his kiss engulfed me, I reached my hand down between us and took hold of his manhood. Ryder jumped as I nervously took him in my hand, but I did not stop. The people would know something was wrong if he did not act. If there was not evidence of our joining on the linen after this was over. I broke away from the kiss, leaving my lips brushing against his.
"I want this, Ryder. I could only ever want this with you."
"Harmony,"
he murmured. I placed him at my entrance and urged him inside, my legs on the back of his thighs guiding him forward. And this time, Ryder did as I asked him to. The fluid Sarai had placed within me, helping him enter me with ease. I tensed my jaw as he filled me, slowly, inch by inch, stretching me wide. My hands reached to hold onto his arms as he filled me so impossibly full. I opened my eyes and met Ryder's gaze. His cheeks were flushed as he kept pushing forward, his face betraying how he felt. Conflicted, yet wrapped up in such incredible pleasure.
"Harmony," he whispered as he pushed all the way in.
Ryder froze, leaning his head back to close his eyes and simply breathe. And I was struck speechless at having him above me. He had looked into my eyes. He had his arms braced protectively over my head. He had only unbridled affection and need in his stare. No hatred. No pride. It made me feel. Until then, I had never felt anything during joinings. I always made myself go elsewhere, dreaming of a world away from the act taking place. But right then, with Ryder, I felt it all. I felt the warm breeze slipping through the gauze curtains. I felt Ryder's hot skin brushing against mine, causing me to shiver in pleasure. But most of all, I felt every second of this in my soul. I felt happiness in my heart. I felt free.
"Harmony," Ryder murmured.
He was looking down at me in concern.
"Are you okay?"
"Yes," I replied softly. "I am more than okay." My words seemed to soothe something in Ryder's stare, and he began to move, gently pulling himself back, only to push back in, the feeling of his gentle strokes like nothing I had ever experienced. The faster he moved, the gentler he became. Ryder's skin glistened with the heat as he rocked within me, and when he lowered his head to press his forehead against mine, I almost cried. I did not know joinings could be like this, this pure and true, this tender. My breath hitched as a strange sensation began stirring inside me. My eyes flew open and Ryder reared his head back.
"Ryder!"
I met Ryder's eyes as they locked beautifully on mine.
"Ryder!"
I repeated, seeing the same awed expression on his face that I knew I wore on my own.
"Harmony," he said,
guttural, low and raw, as his hips moved faster. My breath raced to catch up with his. Then, taking me by surprise, my back arched as a rush of red-hot heat pulsed through my body, lifting me to a great height from within. A loud cry tore from my lips as I felt a bright light splinter me apart, only to fuse me back together with an impossible feeling of pleasure. My hands held on to Ryder as I tried to contain the brightness exploding within. I opened my eyes, just in time to see Ryder's neck tense and the same pleasure I was feeling possess his face. But unlike me, Ryder never took his eyes from mine. He stayed with me, locked both within my stare and heart as he roared out his release and filled me with his warmth. Ryder's hips rocked into me gently in the aftermath. He gasped in short, strained breaths, then calmed as we grew still, both in shock at what had just transpired, at the indescribable feeling of grace I knew we both had just shared.
"Harmony,"
Ryder whispered again, my name like a prayer spilling from his soul. He leaned down and kissed me. He joined our mouths just as surely as our souls were now joined too. When we parted, the crowd outside began to cheer, puncturing the cocoon of warmth and light we had momentarily been in. It was like a cold douse of water being poured over our heads, bringing us back to where we were.
"We need to go," Ryder said sadly.
And I knew that, like me, he was wishing we could freeze time, eradicate the unwanted audience and stay right here, keeping our hearts brimming with this much contentment.
"Ah, no," I said reluctantly, sighing as he removed himself from within me.
It was strange. When Ryder left my body, I felt like I had lost a piece of my soul, too. Ryder slipped on his pants and stood from the bed. I watched as he gathered his composure, then turned to me. I took his outstretched hand and followed him out of the enclosed bed. Ryder squeezed my hand in his as we walked outside, my naked body immediately on display. He shielded me as much as possible,
before snapping his fingers at a nearby guard to give me my garment. I slipped the dress on quickly and waited for what came next.